Hello, creepies, and welcome to another middle-aged mini-episode on the Middle-Aged and Creeped Out podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hey, creepies, welcome to Middle-Aged Mini 265. Nate is your tech engineer, and we are your hosts, Todd and Sean, and we are middle-aged and creeped out. What's going on, guys?
Perfect night.
It has been.
It has been, really. We've had a good, you said I haven't had this much fun in a long time.
Why are we having a great time?
We have a guest in studio, my son, William.
Yeah. Mr. William Lehman. I call him William Harrison.
That's right. Yeah. First time. I call him Harrison all the time.
So keep the fun rolling.
That's right.
Yeah. We had a fun, full episode just now.
Yeah. William.
I want to do it again.
He brought it, right?
It's been brought.
Mm-hmm. It has been.
Yeah. That was a good time, William.
I had a great time.
This might be one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And when I listen to it back, I'm going to enjoy it even more as a listener. So, yeah, it's been a great night. We got a special guest studio, William. Can't go wrong with
that. He's trying to take over my spot. So far, he's doing excellent.
I didn't want to say that, but
retirement right now.
It's a definite. He's,
you said it, not us.
He's going to be my, so I got to say, and we are your hosts, Todd and William. And sorry.
You know that Todd's name is, or middle name is William.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My dad was William.
Yeah.
So his name was William. And then my middle name, and then Elijah's middle name is William. Yeah. So, yeah. Good name. Strong name.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right. Nate. I'm looking right at him.
Harrison?
Sean.
Where's Harrison at?
No. Good night. Dane. Sean. What are we talking about for this episode?
This is William's pick, and this is a strange one, and he is my son, right?
Yes.
So, the Doddleson messages, and if interested, please go check out our show notes for the source links we use for this topic.
Now, before you start.
Absolutely.
Before you start.
Him.
Before you start your foundation. Mm-hmm. William, how did you come up with this topic? How did you come up with this?
I saw a YouTube video over it. It was really curious. I still don't exactly, no, but I just thought it was really cool.
Okay, so you saw it on social media.
Yeah.
Okay, because I had never heard of it, and I just wondered how you,
Yeah.
Cool. Very good.
So, actually, he has the foundation. And I like this because we've never done anything that's what I would consider, this is really strange, but a computer haunting.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is a computer, we always
kind
say.
Kind of a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Kind it of definitely a different is. Aspect of a haunting. Yeah. So who's got the foundation then? Are you going to read it, William?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay. Go ahead.
The Doddleson messages began in the 1980s when a man named Ken Webster bought a computer for his home in the English village of Doddleson. While using the computer, he and his friends began receiving strange text messages from someone called Lucas. Lucas claimed to be a man living in the year 1541 who could somehow communicate through the computer, despite having no understanding of modern technology. His messages were written in Middle English style spelling and described life during the reign of King Henry VIII. As the conversation continued, Lucas seemed confused about the strange box of light he was using to communicate. The mystery grew even stranger when additional messages appeared from another entity claiming to be from the distant future around the year 2109.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The second communicator warned Webster and his friends not to trust everything they were being told and hinted that the conversations were part of a much larger experiment involving time. The messages often contradicted each other, raising questions about whether they represented genuine time travel, parallel universes, supernatural forces, or an elaborate hoax. Webster documented the conversations in his book, The Vertical Plane, which brought the story to a wider audience.
Mm, that's good job.
Wow. Wild is what it is.
I think he discussed it.
Yeah.
He did. He really did.
We're done.
Well, that's a wrap, mate.
What is that, right? That was easy, wasn't it?
So,
minis are a piece of cake.
Isn't that crazy? 1500s to the 2100s.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, what's going on here?
So, the interesting thing is that, Ken, he lived with his girlfriend, Debbie, and then they had a roommate, and they were all friends, and they went out to a pub. So, this is back in the 80s, and computers weren't all that elaborate back then. And they first started seeing, it says the signs of a natural activity in the cottage were strange. Six toed footprints in the dust that seemed to walk up the walls of the old cottage. At first, Ken and his girlfriend dismissed the footprints as a prank. So they would paint over them and then they would come back. So and then they started having the computer have these messages, and the messages seemed like they were written in Old English. And the crazy thing is for a mini, the YouTube that you watched was one of my favorites is the Y-Files. So AJ yeah. Gentil, and he has this. So normally he takes these stories, he talks about them. They're fantastic. Then he debunks them. This one, he does the story and then he goes in and he's like, I really can't debunk this.
Yeah.
He finds a couple holes in it, but he actually is like, I really can't. This, I don't think you could ever prove that this is a hoax or not a hoax.
It really seems like nobody can.
And it is, it's pretty wild. But so the weirdest thing is the communications from the past. Then there were communications from the future. And when you look into it, there is a poltergeist. Mm-hmm. Because all of the six finger or the six toed footprints and things are moving. And when they, as they communicate more and more from the two, you know, the 80s and the 1500s, they are both having paranormal activity happen at the same time.
But just,
yeah. Which is crazy. And then it looks like it's coming from the future person. Hmm. Yeah. So
it's kind of like that movie Frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Jim Caviezel.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. Gosh darn.
I can't think of the name either. We're going to have a middle-aged moment.
Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid, yes. Yeah. Yep.
I love that movie. It's the same thing. It's like one's...
in one time error. And
but things are happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, they said there's sudden gusts of cold wind. They had shadows that moved around and the feeling of an invisible entity around the house. And they found tins of cat food stacked on top of each other. Stacked in a pyramid.
Uh-huh. They thought that people were like playing a joke on them. And that's why, but they would leave their computer on and they would get these messages. And they said, and in total, there was 300 messages that were from this Lucas, who was actually named Thomas, because he wasn't given his real name at the beginning. And they say that he was giving some facts about like who was the king. So it ended up being King Henry VIII. And, you know, he gave like, things that weren't right. And then they say that he was giving false information because the future guy was telling him to not tell everything accurately. And they think that what seemed to be the puppet master was the one that was living in 1209.
Yeah.
And they would, and all of the communications, they decided when they were receiving these communications, they started to leave questions and would ask questions. And then they did it with both the past and the future. And it just got it's very, very convoluted. Like really follow the story, there's a lot to it.
There's a lot. I'm just going to read this quick paragraph. It says, so the man from 1546, which just kills me, it says, Lucas identified himself as a resident of the 16th century who believed his cottage was being occupied by strange visitors, namely Ken and Debbie. He wrote as though communicating through a magical device, expressing both curiosity and skepticism about the technology, the magical device. I just think that's funny. It's like, you know.
He said that somebody came out of his fireplace and it turned green. And then a man came out and said, don't be afraid. And he was going to give him this magical box, basically. Yeah. And that magical box when he spoke words into it, his words would turn green on the screen, which is what an old 80s computer would do.
Yeah.
And so that in itself is wild.
I know.
But he said, so he told him that same house that they were living in, it was on a nice little parcel of land and it was made from red stone. And they're like, well, this building isn't made of red stone, but they were doing renovations at that time. And they had like out in the garden, they started finding red stone and in the basement, they found red stone. So it actually had been a red stone house at one point, which was kind of wild.
They had a lot of, this says they had a lot of, I'll just read it. It says several paranormal experts visited Donaldson to study the phenomenon. They sought evidence of ghosts, spirits, or other supernatural forces that might explain this electronic or the electronic writing. So, I mean, they jumped on it, you know, to see what's going on, the paranormal investigators. And then we're talking in the 80s, yeah. Well, what would they do now? Like in 2026, they'd be all about it.
That Ken took the writings to a local professor and who was, you know, studied languages. And, you know, he was like, this is pretty wild. Like, this is accurate. If this is a hoax, this is one elaborate hoax.
Yeah.
Other people would point out that there was punctuation and they're like, they're not going to use punctuation back
like question marks.
Right.
The language was like a bit off. Like,
but if it's technology doing the communicating, maybe the technology took over for that. So, which is kind of weird.
That kind of adds another layer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As far as like, oh, wait a minute.
It's like, what the heck?
Yeah. The paranormal community embraced the mystery, drawing parallels with other cases of electronic voice phenomena, or EVP, as and time anomalies. So who knows? It is a crazy story. I've never heard of this thing.
So the weirdest thing I think of, so if there's poltergeists involved in all this, like time, you know, traveling and time communication, like think about, like, can ghost activities be controlled by something in the future? Because this 1209, as it would refer to itself, it would come in and basically show itself as like this puppet master, you know, and like they didn't want the two timelines communicating, you know, they said not to tell personal things about each other, and it would give some false information. So that's why they think that some of that information was misleading because of that 1209. But the 1209 actually wanted to end up talking to another gentleman who was a ufologist, that Gary. Yep. And then that's a whole nother level where he's come out recently and said that he believes this whole thing was real. And it's just it's spooky. It's eerie. It's weird. And if it was a hoax, it is one of the most elaborate pulled off hoaxes I've ever seen.
They really had to think it through to really go to make it. If it's fake, like, okay, we got to. And like this and this and make it, you know,
AJ from the Y-Files, he's a big, like, he looks over everything, and he's even like, I'm not sure what to make of this. Like, this is really, really
so odd. Interesting. It's so different.
So the Lucas, who was Thomas, he actually had told them that he was going with all their communications. One of the last things he said is he wanted to write a book about their stories and their communications and their love for each other across time, and that he was going to leave it in the Oxford Library. And so he said, you'll know it because it says, you know, basically to, you know, dedicated to my friends and all this stuff. And so that 1209's last message says that the guy from 1541,
2109,
or 2109. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm getting my years all mixed up. 2109 basically said to the person in the past had finished the book, and that they were to look for it and all this kind of stuff. So somewhere out there is supposed to be this book that would hold them all together.
Yeah, if they find that, then
that would be
that answers the question.
That would be wild. Yeah. Yes. Too many years. Like,
yeah.
In 1983 or 12. What are we doing here?
Yeah. There's a lot of theories and definitely debates.
So William,
what the heck is going on?
What do you think about it? Like, what is it?
I think that's too, like, that'd be too good of a hoax to be a hoax. Like, I think that's got to be real, but I don't know, like, how really, like,
it's a lot of layers, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, how that would work. And
I'm not smart enough to. I couldn't come up with this. I just couldn't.
With all the stuff we're talking about, like I said, I would encourage people to go listen. It's about a 20-minute video of the Y-Files reviewing it, and it is there. It goes through step by step of the communications that were, and they can't go through all 300 because 300 is a lot to read. But it's pretty wild, the communications back and forth, and the questions they started asking each other, and how they started putting it together. That, oh, I'm living in this house currently in the 80s, and you're back, you know, in the 1500s, and we can still communicate in the present moment, and it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're saying that the messages were confusing and could be interpreted the way a reader would want them to be interpreted. They're saying the messages, they could have merely be a computer glitch, which probably not.
Yeah.
Or did Ken fake them to sell a book and profit from the gullibility of the public? That's one heck of a ruse.
That would be a good way to.
Like I said, you'd have to really plan this out.
Yeah.
To really, you know, if you're going to fool somebody. It says debates about the authenticity of the Donaldson messages persist. Proponents of the hoax theory cite logical inconsistencies, while believers point to historical accuracy and the lack of clear motive for deception. Some theorists propose that the Donaldson messages were the result of a time slip, a concept suggesting that time itself may occasionally overlap or fold, allowing for moments of cross-era communication. I mean, we've talked about time slips. And you know,
time slips is fun.
Time slips come into play with, like, UFOs. Like, you know, there's lost time. And
yeah.
Oh my gosh, I was gone 5 days, but it just seemed like 15 minutes.
Well, that's what I think this whole thing is interesting, you know, because, and then if they, you know, poltergeist activity, the people in the future are sitting there pulling the strings with, you know, two other timelines. And they said, so they were asked, like, who are you and where are you from and all this stuff? And it's like, we are from energy, a heat source that you aren't even familiar with yet. So they had like technology mm-hmm. that didn't even make sense to us. So it was, it's right. very bizarre.
Well, we've talked about like all of our, you know, hauntings, ghosts or whatever, you know, they talk about like we see in a haunted place from, you know, the 1800s. So we see a you know, lady say, you know, whatever, dressed in that time period. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, sometimes when it's intelligent, haunted, like if she's seeing us, she's thinking, what the heck's going, like, you know, they're asking the same thing.
Yeah.
They're viewing us like, wait a minute, you know, maybe
this isn't right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like what's the deal? Like, so it, I can buy the time slip thing. I mean, I could see that where it's just a crossover. I don't know.
I think if like he would have faked it all, I don't think like, cause he brought in like the paranormal with it. And I think if he faked it, that would have been like you can't really fake like paranormal activity. And like, I think that part, like, disproved that he faked it just for his book.
It's too hard to really wrap around.
It really,
my mind, like my mind wrap around, because I can't really figure out what.
I'd like to read the book, The Vertical Plane. I think that would be very interesting. And they say that neither one of them, the original three ever tried to like make a lot of money off of this. Obviously there's, you know, wrote a book, but just trying to tell, you know, and they said the one thing that they believe that in time, they will be shown to be correct on all this. They're not hiding anything. They're not trying to be deceptive. They were just trying to report what exactly happened in the time, you know, the time that they had conceptualized with it, because it's very complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, you can follow it, but then it's hard to follow because there's a lot that goes with it.
Yeah. I mean, you're having time slips between two very distant times.
This puts it really well.
And paranormal.
It's like a buffet of what we talk about. This says, most ghost stories walk familiar ground. Someone complains about a cold draft that has no source, or they glimpse a shadow moving where no person stands, or maybe a staircase groans as if carrying a heavy, hidden weight. People nod along because that's what they expect from such tales. Doddleston messages refused to follow that script. In the 1980s, in that quiet Cheshire village, the haunting skipped the attic and the corridor. It showed up instead on a BBC microcomputer, lines of text glowing in green as though someone from another century had discovered the keyboard.
Yeah, it's... Can you imagine if you're in the 1500s?
In a glowing box.
Yeah, like, what are they... Like, if this is true... Like, what the heck would you...
They did get to a point.
It'd be like us in 2026 seeing something
just floating
500 years from now or 400 years, like technology, like, what is this? You know?
So just like the person in the past had a computer box or a magic box or whatever, they also got to a point when they were communicating that they would leave paper out and a pen and just let the messages come. So they came actually through the written word. Mm. And very eccentric the way that those came too. So that's a whole nother part of it.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very simple.
But I like a computer haunting. We've never talked about it. We've talked about aspects of it. But it is, to me, like I said, that whole idea of poltergeist being somebody from the future playing with our minds. Same thing, like you said, UFOs and all that kind of stuff. Maybe it is future us or future, you know, some kind of civilization that's just playing mind games. You know, maybe that's their computer games. They're, you know, we're like in this little simulation that they're playing, you know.
I don't know.
That's a scary thought. Mm-hmm. But it's possible.
It's kind of scary and it's kind of weird and but it's interesting as to talk about as podcasters. It said, it said the psychological impact. So Ken and Debbie reportedly experienced significant stress due to their involvement. Their lives were forever altered by the enigmatic events that unfolded in their home. The Doddleston messages challenge our understanding of time, technology, and the nature of reality itself. They provoke deep questions about the limits of human perception and the mysteries of existence. I bet they were stressed. I mean,
I bet.
Whether they brought it on by, you know, like, oh crap, this kind of backfired, you know, if they were hoaxing, or just stressed if it was something real. Like, either way, they're going through it, you know, mm-hmm. like it was, it changed their lives. So I think that's kind of like, okay, whether it's real or not, it still affected them.
And their story never changed. Like, it's not like they were like, oh, we were just kidding or, you know, just take that off.
Right. They haven't. Yeah.
They said that someday time will tell or and show that they are probably won't be around. Yeah. Well, you're probably right. Yeah.
No, it's
you don't think we'll make it to 2109?
Probably not. I don't think I'll. Yeah. You guys have anything else on the Doddleston?
What do you think, Nate? You think anything?
Oh, it's hard to make heads or tails.
I don't even know where to start.
You got to watch the Wi-Fi version of it because I'm telling you, it makes a lot of sense. Because I was trying to make heads or tails of it. And then when I watched that, I'm like, okay, this makes more sense. But there is a lot of avenues to it. So yeah, I'd encourage you to go out there and listen to that.
I mean, this says, summarizing the phenomenon, it says, the Doddleston messages are a perplexing case that defies easy explanation. Whether a clever hoax or a genuine paranormal event or something in between, they continue to spark curiosity and debate. In a world increasingly dominated by rationality and science, mysteries like Doddleston remind us of the unknown. They compel us to keep asking questions and seeking answers, no matter how elusive. That's pretty much it. Yeah, like... I won't be obviously be around to see what if it's real or not. I don't even think William would be around. Who knows? Because it could be years and years and years. I don't know. This is a very
it's dizzying.
I'm just not good with this type of stuff anyway, and like the whole computer thing. So I'm ignorant, and I can't ever really. I'm not smart enough. I'm not an idiot, but like I'm not very good at this technology stuff, so I can't even figure out how the heck it's.
You need diagrams, don't you? Because I do too. That's why I said.
Well, I put it on a wall and just march me through it, step by step, to
get the colored string.
I need something. I'd have it just.
Well, here's
AJ does a really good job of stepping through it.
One.
You got an example?
Well, it just puts it in perspective. At the time this was going on, there was no internet, so the computer wasn't hooked up to a network or anything.
Right, I saw
that's
that.
That's what's wild.
So it's doing its own thing. It's so not communicating.
Well, that's why they said it was a glitch, but that's one heck of a glitch, right?
Yeah, I mean, to actually like write poems and dialect, I mean, it would have to be programmed into it, especially at that time.
Yeah.
More or less, I mean, that's all that they really served was word processing and bookkeeping.
Yeah.
I mean, it was before the time of, you know, major computer games and that kind of stuff, communications.
They called it said the BBC microcomputer, a staple of 1980s technology, was a modest yet powerful device used primarily for educational and basic computational tasks. With, like Nate said, with limited memory and no internet connection, it was an unlikely tool for receiving mysterious communications. Like, how does it? Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is that was the first thing he did is he took it to the college or the school and said, hey, what is this? Like, why is my computer doing this? And so he had somebody look at it, and that's when it was like the pouring over those messages. Like, well, let me know if you get any more. Well, yeah, I keep getting them. And so it was, and even the paranormal, investigation into it. The weird thing about that is that they finally hit a brick wall where they wouldn't say whether it was a hoax or not. And they said, you know, if this is a hoax, it's a very elaborate hoax, but we don't know how they're doing it. And it might've been two people. It could have been a third. But we really don't know. And they just kind of backed away from it. And then they said, when you look into it now, there's no records that they even ever looked into it, but we know that they did. So that's even weirder too, that they kind of deny that they were even, you know, taking part in investigating it.
This has nothing to do with the story. I never knew when the internet started. I'm like, well, I thought like 98, 95, 98 was the first time I actually got on the internet. So I know it was a little before that.
94, right?
So it says the internet did not come out all at once, but began with ARPANET. In 1969, adopted a standard protocol in 1983 and opened as the World Wide Web to the public in 1991. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that. It said, in 69, the first computer network was the ARPANET. It connected four university computers in the United States. Then in 83, the network adopted TCP-IP protocols on January 1st, 83, creating the unified network system recognized as the modern internet. And then in 91, the World Wide Web, invented by Tim Berners-Lee, became publicly available, leading to everyday use by 1993 and 1994.
You mean Al Gore, right?
Yeah. So I think
nobody would. So there was an internet in 91, but nobody really,
it wasn't available.
It wasn't. Yeah. And nobody was on it. And so it was like 94 is when like people started, you know, like, what is this thing? And I think people became more interested in it.
And what they're saying, like in 1969, as far as a network, that's still like a very crude concept of the internet. I mean, basically you have
computers took
four
up
computers,
huge rooms
linked together that can communicate amongst each other.
Yeah. Which is it wasn't really like, kind of fascinating to think.
You know? Yeah.
Back in 1969.
It's very, very,
but it wasn't the worldwide
low,
but just it all kind of developed as then 14 years later and then years later
when they rolled out with the World Wide Web, then that's like anybody could buy a computer, hook up to it, and have access to this huge amount of information on servers.
See, like in 91, I was 20. We didn't have a computer. I had it like back in 86. I had I played games on it mainly. What's the game? Name the computers in the 80s. Start with a C, I think. Anyway.
Apple, Mac.
I'll think of it later.
Commodore
64. So I thought that was great. But then I don't remember internet 91. Mm-hmm. And then I don't remember 94. But like I said, 98 was when I was married the first time. That's when we bought our first CompuServe. And we signed up with, you know, the internet or whatever, and $10 a month. And I was like,
Net zero, I remember.
Yeah.
The dial-up.
But like the dial-up, and, you know, my dad would get frustrated. He's like, hey, I've been trying to get a hold of you. Well, we've been on the computer. Sorry. You know?
Yeah.
But like,
it was a weird time.
So I'm 7 years past when it started, I guess. Mm-hmm. I didn't know 91. I can't even think back 20. I didn't know. Okay. Yeah. I remember that. No idea that internet was going on. Mm-hmm. Not for a number of years. In 95 was the first time I had used a computer for like finances, you know. Like software. I thought that was fantastic. But again, I wasn't hooked up with any, like I couldn't email or, pull up a website or anything.
Yeah, it was wild when it first started.
Yeah. Like QuickBook.
Email was crazy.
Quicken. Yeah. Quicken. You remember Quicken?
Mm-hmm. Quicken, yeah.
That's what I would
use. Still around.
Yeah, yeah. Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of how I developed with my computer stopped, which I don't know how to use it. this is my computer, my phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gave up years ago. I don't know how it all works. How's the sorcery?
Someday when we all have, and I'm not, however this advances, someday we'll be like, remember when we had phones and we carried our, you know, computers in our pocket and our communication devices, you know, and then someday that'll see an arcade.
Now they got them in our glasses.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Chips in our head, who knows?
Oh gosh,
meta glasses.
Yeah, that is pretty cool though. Those are wild.
As a guy that has to wear glasses, you know, other than when I'm sleeping, I don't know when to get
record
into that.
Your life.
I don't want.
You can record on the.
We could record us recording.
Do what?
You could also play like music on it and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, only you can hear it too.
It's just kind of weird because it's like somebody's talking to themselves because you just like look over and they're talking to Meta.
Because it's still Siri, right? Because you can be like, Siri, do this and they'll talk to you.
It's basically Siri, but it's like.
Or you call it Meta, right? Yeah, you say Meta.
You're
like
Meta.
But how do you. Music. So it's just audio. I mean, obviously.
I've tried them on. A friend of ours has, their sons have them and then they
That's
have
what
them.
Ryder wore them to the hill.
And then he wore them to the hill so you could see. And then he also did it during a baseball game too, or gave it to somebody to wear.
So like, so you can listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like, instead of
like the jawbone technology, where it's outer ear and it uses your bones as the amplifier.
It's weird.
I might as well be in the 1500s.
Cool.
I'm like,
it's cool. Though. Yeah, exactly.
I can't even.
What is this devil box we speak of?
What in the heck?
Devil glasses.
I'm still trying. Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't.
This is a fun one though. Yeah. Good job on this one too, because this is
William is. For two tonight.
He is on it tonight. Yeah. I am definitely lost. I have definitely lost my seat.
anything else before we officially?
No, but it's been fun. Yeah, it's been a lot. This has been a fun night.
Yeah, good choice. Good choice, William. All right. Well, Nate, I guess it's on your shoulders again.
We dawdled around enough on this one. That's a wrap.
That's right.
That's pretty good. We did dawdle, especially me. All right. Well, thanks, Nate. And we want to thank you, Creepies, for listening to our Middle-Aged Mini 265. and our discussion on the Doddleston messages. So until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
See ya.